You're listening to Sex and Love with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. This series focuses on all topics related to sex and love, both here in the U.S. and around the world. My goal is to not only showcase sexually empowered people, but also give a voice to the challenges many face due to the taboo nature of sexuality in many cultures. Here's what's coming up on today's episode. Have you ever wondered what exactly a certification in sex therapy entails? So it's not just a reading list, classes, and lectures. All ASECT certified sex therapists go through what's referred to as a sexual attitude reassessment, which in part involves watching a whole lot of porn of every variety in a group with our peers. We are going to talk about all of that. I'm also going to talk with my guest about the difference between sex coaching and sex therapy. Guess what? There is an option for people who want help without having to dive into their relationship with their mothers. Before we get into the rest of the show, I want to remind you to please rate and review the show. Sponsors need to see that you love the program, and we need sponsors to keep the program running. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. I am joined by the legendary Dr. Patty Britton. Dr. Britton is a board-certified clinical sexologist who has been the leader of over 55 SARs, which we will talk about later. She is the author of the only sex and relationship training manual and world-renowned as the pioneer of the profession of sex coaching. She's the author of hundreds of articles, book chapters, forewords, and 5 major books in sexology. She's a popular speaker to consumers and a seasoned professional trainer for her peers. She's appeared on over 200 television shows and the featured guest on over 250 interviews for radio, podcasts, and media such as Cosmo, Men's Health, Women's Health, Celebrity Podcast, and popular sex health-related websites. What hasn't she done? Dr. Patty believes that women and men have a divine birthright to experience their full erotic and sexual potential. You can connect with her via her website, drpattybritton.com, which will be linked in the description. So again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. And before we jump in, I think it's really important to speak to your audience, those of you who are listening, who are in the field of human sexuality. SAR is such an important component and required by some of our certifying and professional training bodies, such as ASEC. And SAR is a sensitivity training for those of us who work with sexuality, with clients, with students, with research, however it is that we do that. And the book that you referenced is actually a SAR training manual, not a sex and relationship training manual.
Okay, a SAR training manual.
But I think it's an important segue into my passion for the work that I do, because I want to make sure that people who are working in this really complex space of our multi-layered experience as sexual beings are really sensitized to where their issues are, where their isms are, where their trigger points are. And so the SAR training manual is really a how-to book with also an international survey from the leading SAR training providers around the world. It also has the history and legacy of SAR and how it originated. SAR is one of my absolutely favorite programs to lead and to design and to take people through, because honestly, from the beginning of a SAR to the end of a SAR, you're not the same person.
SAR stands for Sexual Attitudes Reassessment. And yes. I'm sure I can speak for most sex therapists that you never forget your SAR. Can you talk a little bit about what happens during a SAR? Because I think it's important, not just for people who might be listening who are already in the field or thinking of joining the field, but just for the general public to know this really integral part of sex therapy training.
Well, SAR originated in the 1970s and really the beginning of the 1970s at the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality. And that's my home school. That's the school that trained me and really where I earned not only my doctorate and my master's in public health and sexology, but I also had the privilege of being on the faculty for many years and became the dean of students for the last several years of its existence. It's gone now, which is so sad. But the founder was this visionary pioneer, Dr. Ted McElvenna. And this was really the beginning of the sexual revolution, right? So here we are in the sexual revolution. We've got this visionary pioneers wanting to make change and bring sexuality into the mainstream and help with healing around sexual issues. And he created this container where people would go through this kind of self-awareness. The arrow points at ourselves in Asar, not at our clients or students. And it's really designed so that you're exposed to this immersion of media, explicit sexual imagery. And I'll never forget my first SAR at the Institute. We had 16 movies running at the same time on the big wall in the SAR room. 16. The eye, the human eye, connected to the human brain, can't analyze. You can't actually go into that analytical part of your brain. You're just sort of there and you're melting into how you feel. And it's really about our values, attitudes, and beliefs. But the other two pieces that are so important are it's the lived experience of those who come and speak from that lived experience, whether they're a trans person, whether they're someone who's been in a wheelchair their whole life and yet experiences ecstatic sex, or there's somebody who is a tantrika, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the second part. And the third part is process. So there's group process. And, you know, I always, when I run the SAR, and I actually have retired, I've trained my own A team who do them all around the world. And when I used to process the group, it was so interesting to hear people say, well, I've watched a lot of porn, but never right. in a group of strangers, some of whom I work with.
Yeah.
And then I would say, well, first of all, it's not all porn. And so let's deconstruct that. How does that make you feel? And so it's really about, as clinicians and helping professionals in sexuality, how do we feel? How comfortable a space or a relationship can I create for my client? And if I have issues or isms or blocks around certain behaviors or identities or whatever, then I can't really be of service to that person or those persons. So that's what SAR is. And I kind of miss it. I now that we're coming out of COVID, I'm like, maybe I could do a SAR.
Am I fully retired from that? What would you say, you've led them for so long? What, if any, differences do you identify from doing them, you know, like pre-porn, before people were exposed to a lot more, you know, entering the field yes. at that time versus yeah. people today?
Well, first of all, the 55 SARs were conducted from 2007 until 2019. We have to contextualize what technology was able to provide us. So people had the ability to look at porn at home. People had the ability to look at it on a smart device. But now porn is ubiquitous, unfortunately. So we know that porn is an issue for young people who can gain access without really having the ability to process that. I have my own views and values about that. The world has opened up in so many ways from my perspective as a sexologist who's been in this field for over 40 years. There are changes I see in our speech. There are changes in our pronouns, for example. There are changes in how we view certain things like monogamy or consensual non-monogamy or polyamorous relationships, or where holistic really fits into the medical model, where diagnosis fits in with assessment when we think about the field that I've created, the profession of sex coaching, which is so different from therapy and mental health care, yet they're allied professions.
So you essentially created this field of sex coaching. So can you tell people a little bit about that and how it's different from sex therapy or sex counseling or sex education?
Absolutely. Well, as you know, I've been in the field of sexology for many years and a leader at some of the leading sexology organizations like ASECT. I'm a former president of that national organization. I just left a position on the advisory council of the World Association for Sexual Health, and I'll remain on committees working at the global level. But sex coaching really emerged. The story that I love to tell is that it's 1990, And I'm living in New York City, and I'm finishing up my doctoral work, and I'm being trained as a sex therapist, and I've already done a lot of work as a sex educator. And I've worked at National Planned Parenthood and at CECAS, which in that day was really the purveyor of sex education standards and trainings and advocacy for comprehensive sexuality education for youth. And I also had other experiences that I brought to the table. And here I was already a sexologist. And I'm like, there's this thing called coaching. Thomas Leonard was the father of coaching. And I began to follow it. And I integrated what I had learned as a sex educator and in my certification as a sex therapist from the Institute in San Francisco. And I married it with this really exciting way of being with a client. Because coaching, to me, has so much more air breathed into it. It's so free. You could be walking in Central Park with a client. You could, and I have, escort a client into an adult store or a sex toy store and say, let's talk about what your body likes. Let's look at the vibrators on this shelf. Or let's talk about healthy lubes. And there's just this sense of the freedom to not be constricted by what I call the medicalization of sexuality and the pathologizing of sexuality. So much of what we know about our sexual expression, our sexual experience, is unfortunately sometimes categorized as disease. And so what I love about using a coaching modality or a coaching model is that it's collaborative. It's not a hierarchy where the therapist or the doctor is at the top and the client is like, you have to do this. It's this exploration together. And as a coach, I really am a guide. I'm a facilitator, and I'm bringing that client with their goals toward their stated desired outcome for their sexual wholeness, their sexual wellness, their sexual pleasure. So much of our work, as you know, is really created as sexologists, as sex experts, to help that person reach a place where they're fulfilled, where they're satisfied, where they know who they are as a sexual person, and where they can experience pleasure. Pleasure is really the new normal. And so, you know, this experience of merging what I knew as a very highly and deeply trained clinical sexologist, both in my practice as well as in my doctoral training, I merged that with this style of working with a client. And it's short term, it's fast paced. It doesn't have the come and see me every Tuesday at 4 for 18 years, because I was seeing clients when I opened my practice who actually had been failed by their therapist. Who I had one client who actually had been in psychoanalysis 4 days a week for 18 years. That's a very costly investment.
It is.
Never, never spoke about sex. Her sexuality was a core issue, stopping her from having the sense of wholeness, and yet never felt comfortable, nor did that therapist elicit that from her. Right. So we're really these collaborators. We lift our clients up. And so I love being able to work from a coaching perspective and also very steeped in the sexological perspective.
Yeah. And I think especially today with how busy everyone is and how crazy everyone's schedules are, I mean, it's hard for my clients to come in for like a 90-minute session. And then I feel like just as we're getting warmed up, session's over and they've got to go switch gears to pick up the kids from school. And I've even moved to doing more intensives with a lot of people, because I find that like in a 4-hour block of time, we can get so much deeper, so much farther. Mm. And, you know, they reach their goals a lot more quickly through that process. And then if they need follow-up sessions, we'll do that. But I think it's just awesome today that people have so many options in how they can go about addressing, you know, their sexual wellness and sense of well-being, whether it's, you know, the coaching style or therapeutically.
And there also are some distinctions that I want to make for you and your listeners, which are that coaching is not a substitute for therapy. Let me say that loud and clear. when we have a client as sexologists who identify as sex coaches, and by the way, I train a lot of psychotherapists and even sex therapists in the coaching modality, and they integrate that style into how they work with their clients. But what is the biggest distinction? There are two. One is that we don't focus on the past. And that doesn't mean we ignore it. Of course, we have to know their sex and relationship history. We have to know their medical history that may impact, impede, or enhance their sexual functioning or their wellness. But really, our focus is on right here, right now. Who are you? Where are you? And where do you want to go? And how can I guide you and help you on that journey? Yeah. And we don't process emotions. And that's a really confusing statement. I know for a lot of people listening, it's like, what do you mean you don't process emotions? Well, what if I start crying or I'm so pissed off at my blah, 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 who's in the room with me, I'm going to kill him or them or them. So really emotions surface, but what the distinction is in the coaching modality, as opposed to therapy, is that when emotions come into the process, what we do is we honor them. We create the possibility for that emotional energetic expression. There's a definition of emotions as energy in motion, which neutralizes this really negativizing of certain emotions like anger or whatever is negative to you. But really this concept of allowing the emotions to be and then allowing a healing expression of those emotions. In other words, not shutting them down. One of the things that really annoys me whenever I'm in a group of any kind is if it's usually a cisgendered female starts crying, what is the first reaction? Tissues. Stop that.
Mm-hmm.
So
shut it down.
This is part of what's wrong with emotional health, that we're always attempting to shut it down unless we're in therapy or doing therapy. Yes. And in coaching, it's not, we don't go there. We don't like go, well, where did that sadness come from? Let's revisit for the thousandth time when your mother yelled at you or you were bullied on the playground. And all of that is important because a client for me to work with that person has to be what we call coachable. If they have serious mental health issues, I can't work with them. They need to clear that first. Then they can come to Dr. Patty or one of my many people I've trained.
Yeah.
But it's a different type of work. And we always refocus the client in a loving way back to their goals. Like, let's remember, why are you here? I know this sadness is coming up, this grief, which we don't talk about enough, by the way, around sex and sexuality is grieving. There's so much grief that is associated, especially for my target population, which is the baby boomers. There's just a lot of unspoken grief. And even look where we are today. We're speaking right now in 2021. It's October something as we're recording this. And we're still crawling out of an abyss called a pandemic. Most of us, myself included, do not see clients in person right now. Mm-hmm. Even now, it's Zoom, 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 or on the telephone or in some virtual mechanism, which is it's a wall between us. And that need for human connection is so real. And sometimes sex becomes what we think of as the need, and it's not that at all. So I help my clients deconstruct. Why are you doing
What does it mean to you?
What does that mean to you?
You talk about how powerful sex coaching is, and you titled one of your sex coaching methods as the bullseye approach. So can you tell people a little bit about that approach and why you titled it that?
Thanks for asking. Well, what I find, 100% of my clients are referred by their psychotherapists because most psychotherapists, and we're not talking sex therapists, ASEC certifies sex therapists, and there are certainly people like you and your team who are well-trained and can be that full container for what the client may bring. Most psychotherapists lack training in sexology or sexuality, and they're afraid of it. They're uncomfortable in talking about sex in particular, and even sexuality, the bigger context. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is people come to me and they've had therapy or pastoral counseling or shamanic work. I don't know, whatever they've had. Right. I do live in LA, remember?
Yes.
And so the outer circles are covered, but the centerpiece is the sexual story. The stuff that's around your sex, your sexuality, is kind of like this secret little chamber that no one has ever given you permission to open up and talk about. Mm. And so the bullseye approach is to go into the center. My clients come to me with relationship issues, with family issues, with money issues, with all kinds of human issues. And what I say to them is, remember, you're not here for therapy. I always make that very clear. Mm-hmm. And I hear you, and I hear that's going on for you. I have many clients who have worked in the entertainment industry where there's a tremendous amount of stress. And even though it looks like privilege, there's a lot of suffering actually in the entertainment industry. And so what I find is I have to bring them back to the core of self. And it's like what I said about that client. It's funny, I'm feeling the memory of her that was in my estimation in some way, and I didn't say this to my client, but almost betrayed by her clinician never going there because of that person's discomfort or lack of ability to do so.
And it's such a shame that not every clinician, no matter their specialty, has, you know, doesn't get at least some education in how to talk to their clients about sexuality, because I know I feel, and I'm sure you would agree, that when we start asking questions about someone's sexuality, it is such a window into their psyche. We learn about who they are at their core. Yes. We learn about how they interact with others. We learn about what drives them. We learn about what their insecurities are. I mean, you just get so much information from exploring that part of someone. You cannot separate your sexuality from your individuality. It's part of your fingerprint.
Sits at the core of self. Mm-hmm. And that's why the bullseye approach is different in a sense. It's that we go there, we go to the core of self, and in there sexuality resides. It's a natural part of our humanness. Mm-hmm. It's not an add-on.
You know, I know a lot of people have some fear about diving into their sexuality, in large part because we still have so much societal shame around that. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is there's so much relief that comes when you finally have someone to guide you in tapping into that part of yourself, because so much understanding and growth comes from doing so, I think.
And so much of toxic shame is the shadow, is the hiding, mm-hmm. is the secretive nature of it. I have a new client who identified as a sex addict, which is a term that I don't support. I support the behavior as compulsive, out of control behavior, but I don't use that terminology. And so this person has spent almost $250,000 in treatment and was referred by an expert in sex addiction treatment who actually came to several of my trainings years ago, maybe even a SAR. I think she felt like, shit, I don't know what to do with this guy. He really wants to reconnect and he wants to overcome his shame. And I'm helping him stop the behavior, but where do we cross the bridge to healthy sexuality? Mm-hmm. And so the work I do with him is so unique for him. The language is different. It doesn't come from that re-shaming and to say, it's okay to talk about, I want you to talk about this. And I want to look at the good choices you made when you began this behavior, mm-hmm. because in the beginning it served you, but then you learn somewhere along the line that this was bad and shameful and wrong. You know, my friend Marty Klein, I'm sure you know Dr. Marty Klein.
Yes.
He used to have this expression and he'd say, sex is bad, shameful, dirty, and something that we really shouldn't talk about, but you should save it for the one you love when you get married.
Right. And it's so, like, that's it's such like, emotional whiplash. Wait.
And so there's something about really bringing bringing our shadow out into the light. That's a lot of the work that you and your team do, that I do. And I do it in the bullseye. And I think that's really coming back to that approach, is that I anchor into that. And if we're going into the outer circles of life, I bring them back into, why are you here? Mm-hmm. Let's remind you why you are here.
Yeah.
It's very behavioristic, mm-hmm. and driven by a lot of home assignments that are really the measure of really good therapy as well as great coaching.
And I think a lot of change can happen with that approach. I mean, there are a lot of people who don't necessarily want to get into all of the emotional processing or revisit the trauma. And I get that. I mean, yes. I really understand. So,
and think about neuroplasticity and where neuroscience has taken us. This constant rehashing of our story of our wounding is not serving us. We have to exorcise the demons. I think that's extremely important. Hence, if somebody hasn't done that, and that's really their mental health issue, they have to deal with that in therapy and then come to a coach. Yeah. But at the same time, we have to unearth, and it's a process. So I say to my clients the first session, I really congratulate you. It takes a lot of courage to show up, to open this up and begin to talk about it. And yes. You'll thank yourself when we're at the end of this journey.
You have written so many books, and I was skimming through your titles, and one stood out because it's a little bit of a fun diversion from the typical style of writing that a lot of sex therapists and educators do. And it's called The Adventures of Her in France. Can you tell people a little bit about that book?
Oh, you're so sweet to ask about that. So my first book, which you don't know about, was actually on HIV and AIDS prevention in the nation's schools. This was in the late 1980s after the AIDS crisis, we'll call it, hit New York. Mm-hmm. And then it was also showing up in San Francisco, and I ran this training project. Some time passed, and somewhere along the line, I have a really, really close friend who is like my soul sister, and we went on this painting trip to France. So we go to the south of France to paint, to learn how to do outside pastel painting. And I did not like it at all. So I became a rebel.
You didn't like painting in the south of France.
I didn't like the teacher is okay, what really okay, it was about. Okay. I loved painting in the south of France.
Okay, fair enough.
I didn't like the teacher and neither did she. So I defected and I started doing my own style, and it became this really beautiful adventure of just exploring these different towns in France. I had a friend who lived, I sound like I live this glamorous life. I don't
know.
Sounds
wonderful.
Let me tell you, I don't necessarily. She lived in Paris. She was an American nurse. And she said, if you're ever in Paris, come spend the night and we'll go out on the towns. So it turned out my return flight, I had a layover in Paris. So I stayed with her. We went to this jazz club. We had the greatest night. It was so much fun. And I'm on the airplane and I'm like, well, it was a really shitty painting trip. And I got a cold. And something just inspired me. And I started writing on the plane by hand. And out came this story. And that story grew and grew and grew. And when I came back home, every morning I would write more and more and more. And eventually the book finished and it became a journey of a woman's sexual explorations, the sexual adventure of this woman who explored everything from BDSM and this tower in a little town in France to a woman who was this shamanic, like goddess with essential oils who lured her up to the top of this store, which was the first Sephora, by the way, in the world.
Fun fact.
Like, what? So I had a ball writing it, and this became my project. And I actually self-published the book, and the books were delivered to me on this day, 9/11/2001.
Oh.
The 9/11. And okay. So the book is still available. I still self-publish it. It's a very naughty, juicy adventure that has just tons of expression about how we can really expand our repertoire as sexual creatures, as Galen Faust loves to call people. And it was so much fun. And that is my only novel that I've written. But I, of course, am always working on a new one.
I think that is so fun. Who doesn't love a little bit of naughty and juicy, especially if it's taking place in Paris?
And yes. In France. Yes. And so, you know, most of my career has been fairly serious. In terms of my work is so much geared toward training professionals, writing for professionals. My SAR book is for professionals. The Art of Sex Coaching is really a training manual for how to be a sex coach, but the book isn't really enough, which is why I started Sex Coach U. Yeah. And And my other book was a consumer book, which is the only consumer book I've ever written besides my novel. And that's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Sensual Massage, which is actually a book on foreplay. It's a word that I am a fan of. I know we have a lot of colleagues in sexology who are like, oh, I can't believe you said foreplay. You're putting so much pressure on sexual intercourse when you say that. I say, oh, come on.
It's a little bit of a relief to hear you say that.
It's the behaviors of foreplay
that
we long for and that we lose in a sustained sexual relationship. That's the that's what I talk to my clients about 90% of the time, don't you? Yeah,
totally. And I think, talk about that book a little bit, since it is meant for consumers and a lot of people listening, I think, would be interested in learning more about that, because I think, I mean, I know a lot of my clients complain about how, you know, they do jump to intercourse a little bit too quickly and there isn't enough foreplay or just focus on relaxation and connection. So talk about what people might learn from that book and where they can find it.
Well, the book was published in 2003 and the book was co-authored by a massage therapist I met on a TV show
that
I was the sex expert on a TV show. And so I coached them live on the TV show called The Other Half. It was an NBC show. And I met Helen and I adored her. And after the show, we were in the green room and she said, oh, I want to get together. We both live in LA. And she was a Brit and just this extraordinary woman who had goddess therapy as her kind of brand, her way of telling women you deserve to feel like a goddess. And I have the hands and the mechanisms to help you feel that. And so we were talking and somebody asked me, would you be willing to write this book? And I went, yeah, but I don't do massage. And so I called Helen. I said, you want to co-author a book? And she went, well, of course, Patty. And so we did. We wrote the book together. I wrote all the words. But I wrote it because Helen massaged my then wonderful partner, Robert Dunlap, and Robert would lie on the floor and she'd go, okay, we're going to teach the four strokes. Oh, let me practice now. All right, there's this. And you go, oh, yeah, yeah. Write that down, Pat. Write that down, Poppy. Did you get that?
That is so funny. So
it was really fun because it was the four basic strokes for being able to give a massage, a sensual massage.
Yeah.
And why sensual? Because sensuality is about slowing it down. Sensuality is what foreplay is really all about, is the slowing it down, the present centeredness, the ability to breathe, the ability to let go and relax and connect. We know as sex experts that there's this cognitive dissonance around sexual arousal, which is in order to open up, we have to be relaxed to build tension. It's such an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
And then we let go and we're in the relaxation state again. I know you've had Michael Castleman on your podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
And his book is so important, Sizzling Sex for Life. One of the things that he says is that we're actually, those of us who work in the sexuality world are actually in the relaxation business.
Oh, I like that.
That's what we're really promoting. Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful. His book is great. And you wrote the foreword for that.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. It's an extraordinary contribution to understanding men in particular, cisgendered men mostly, but men of all identities, but also couples.
Yeah.
And it's a really great treasure.
You have so much to offer. Tell people where they can find out more and sign up for one of your workshops for both professionals and just the general public who might be interested taking one of your intensives.
Well, the best thing to do is to sign up at drpattybritton.com for my newsletter, because I send them out once a month-ish and talk about where am I, what am I up to? And also at Sex Coach You, sexcoachletteru.com. That's where I spend 90% of my time. I'm the CEO of a training organization that's now in 77 countries in Puerto Rico. We have students globally, and I'm so moved by the quality of our students, our graduates, sharing in my mission that we're really promoting sexual wellness, sexual healing, and sexual pleasure. And so that's how to find me. I also do lead a 6-day experiential live-in intensive.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, called Aspects. Now that's an advanced SAR. And it's geared toward professionals who really want to dive deep. It's a heal the healer journey. And it's really designed to let down all your guard. whatever yeah. walls you still have, whatever crust you built up, guess what? They're going to come down and you're going to be transformed. It's such a transformation experience. So because of COVID, there was none in 2020. There is none in 2021. I prefer leading them in the springtime in the woods of Poland. That's the International Training Center is in Poland, in Warsaw. And so anyone listening who really feels that call, occasionally we'll take people who are not professionals working in sexuality. It really depends on your background, but this is an extraordinary experience and we limit it to, at the most, we've had 30 people. And by the way, a third of them are the care team. So it's a totally safe environment and it's my favorite thing I do. So awesome. Thank you for asking about
that. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining the conversation today. I learned a lot in the short time that we had together, and I know my listeners will too. So it was a pleasure.
It was just wonderful. Thank you so much for asking me, and good luck on this podcast. It's really important what you're doing.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Sex and Love with me, Dr. Emily Jamia. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend or partner. I release an episode every other Monday. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Dr. Emily Jamia. If you and your partner are struggling with emotional and sexual intimacy, check out my online workshop available at www.emilyjamia.com. See you guys next time on Sex and Love.